Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hashtags Conthusiast, the podcast. This week is a solo episode, and I wanted to dedicate it to some of the most frequently asked questions that I receive. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I do a Sunday Q&A every single Sunday night while I'm doing my 10-minute LED mask treatment. And as the weeks have gone on, and I've been doing this for a few months now, the questions have doubled, tripled, quadrupled in number, and I simply cannot get to even half of them in the 10 minutes that it takes me to do the treatment. And I do end up spending extra time to talk to you all, and I do end up spending a lot of extra time in DMs and answering more questions than I can in those 10 minutes. But there are some that I just, no matter how hard I try, I can't get to. That just the volume of questions coming in has really increased. So I wanted to dedicate an episode to some of the most frequently asked questions and kind of all of the overflow from last week's Q&A. I wanted to get to those questions that I didn't have time to answer in question in stories. And these are a lot of super common ones. So I think this episode's going to be really helpful for you all. Let's start with one of the most common, which is, what is my skincare routine slash can I drop the three-step routine? And if you've been following over on social, I have had a few videos get a lot of traction where I talk about the simplicity of a three-step routine and how amazing that can be for our skin. For me personally, there have been many times in my life, including right now, where I really dial back to a three-step routine to just help repair my skin barrier. Your skin just looks like so much healthier, brighter, more luminous when you are taking care of it in a less is more fashion. I find this with myself, I find this with my patients, and of course, it's a lot friendlier on the budget as well because you're not spending on all these trendy products that don't actually do anything. So, what is a good three-step routine to follow when you want to follow this kind of efficacious, clinically proven routine? In the morning, that is going to look like you can cleanse if you want, but if you don't want to cleanse, you can go straight to a vitamin C serum. And then you want to always moisturize. And the most important thing in the morning is a sunscreen. Now, for some people, especially people on the oilier side, they won't need a moisturizer and a sunscreen. They'll just need a moisturizing sunscreen. And nowadays, there are hundreds and hundreds of SPF formulations. Many of them are moisturizing enough to use as a moisturizer. So that can cut your routine down to 2 to 3 steps in the morning and make it super simple. I do like pairing a vitamin C underneath my sunscreen because those two things work synergistically. Vitamin C actually helps our sunscreen work better because there is no sunscreen in the world that protects us from 100% of UV radiation. So we are always getting some sort of reactive oxygen species or free radicals from this exposure, plus the exposure we get to pollutants and things like that that aren't UV related. So the vitamin C is a potent antioxidant that then helps to basically scrounge up all those free radicals that are created in our skin so that it can help prevent things like skin damage, aging, sunspots, all of those things that we associate with aging and sun damage. So that's a really easy way to get your three-step routine pretty simplified in the morning. And then at night, I always cleanse, almost always double cleanse. I truly believe that everybody really requires a double cleanse if you're using enough sunscreen in the morning. It's difficult to remove all your sunscreen with just one cleanse. So if you're wearing enough sunscreen and or you're wearing makeup, make sure that you're double cleansing at night. I would like to lump that in as one step because it really is just cleansing your skin appropriately. And then I'll do a retinoid and a moisturizer, or a moisturizer, then a retinoid, depending on what formulation of retinoid I'm using, how my skin is feeling. If you're just starting out, you know that I really recommend putting your moisturizer underneath your retinoid. It's going to help curb some of that irritation. It's going to help your skin acclimate better and really repair that barrier. So there's tons of brands out there that are fantastic for this simplified three-step routine in the morning and the nighttime. I'll put a few down below. I'll put like a couple simple three-step regimens for you guys, but it's not brand specific, right? Any brand of product that works for you in your budget, seems to do well for your skin, can fit itself into that category. So if you have a vitamin C you love, you don't need to go out and get a new vitamin C. You can keep using the one you have and still simplify your routine effectively. Of course, I'm not always using a three-step routine. Sometimes I amp it up when my skin is feeling good or I feel like I'm in need of a little bit of extra. I'll always add steps. I would say that my routine is never more like on my face alone probably never more than 5 or 6 steps. And that would be an extreme case, like when I'm using a lot of products for some reason. Now there's other like little products that I add in. I added neck products, like, you know, a brow serum, things like that. I don't count those as like my core skincare routine. Best way to prevent hormonal acne. So this is really a difficult topic and one that I have patients come in daily requesting guidance on. Hormonal acne is very common. And in truth, all acne is hormonal in some way. There's a hormonal component to all types of acne. But when people say hormonal acne, usually what they mean is the kind of beard distribution, which is like the lower face, the jawline, the chin. We see a lot of those hormonal breakouts, the cheeks sometimes, and they're often associated with your menstrual cycle around that time of the month. Some people will also break out during ovulation. For some, it's kind of consistent throughout the entire month, but it's still that like painful cystic feeling acne in the lower face, and they'll refer to it as hormonal acne. The best thing that we can do for this is, number one, try to figure out if there's something external that could be contributing to it. So this can be, unfortunately, hormonal birth control. For some people, they will find that hormonal birth control really helps their acne. And for some, they'll find that it can aggravate it or even bring it on to begin with. And it's sometimes hard to know which camp you're going to be in until you try. What I will say is the combination pills tend to be better for those with acne. And those are most of the pills that are given today. Most of them are combo pills. Also, the hormonal IUDs can do it as well. So sometimes I see that when a patient has just had a hormonal IUD placed, they will have these hormonal breakouts. And I don't want to discourage anybody from using birth control methods like these ones. They are safe. They are effective. They are a fantastic option for females. I've used them for many years for myself. So I don't want to discourage anybody, but it is something to think about if you're acne prone or if you're really concerned about those acne breakouts, or you've just started to experience acne breakouts and you're trying to figure out why. Another kind of lifestyle factor that can be contributing to this type of hormonal acne is stress and also diet. So if you're eating a diet that's high in simple carbohydrates or sugars, that could be continuously spiking your blood sugar levels or causing any sort of insulin resistance. That also, as well as stress, those things kind of kick off a cascade of hormones in our body that could then lead to this type of hormonal acne. Now, once you've kind of done an inventory on those things to see if any of that might be contributing to it, the next best thing to do is to be on some sort of a consistent retinoid for acne. So whether that's prescription strength tretinoin or tazarotin, or maybe it's an over-the-counter strength of adapalene, you want to be on that regularly, and it will help to curb some of that hormonal acne. It might not take it away completely, but if you're on it for 8 to 12 weeks plus, you should start to see a decrease in those breakouts. There are some other medications we give in clinic. Of course, many of you have heard of things like spironolactone. Also, there's a topical kind of style medication like this that we can use called Winlevi that can help with hormonal acne that I've seen some success with. There are lots of prescription topicals. There's also a new supplement called Nutrafol Skin from Nutrafol, and they have some pretty great studies on how that can help with mild to moderate adult female acne, whether you think it's hormonal or has other causes. That can be really helpful. I was really impressed with this formulation. I'll leave a little discount code below for that, but please, please check with your own provider before you start something like that to make sure it's not interfering with anything else that you're doing, and just to make sure that you're clear to start any new supplement, which is always my advice. Always talk to your provider first, because they're the ones really in the trenches with you and dealing with your skin. And this advice is not medical advice. It's just kind of general skincare advice. So we always want to make sure that you're checking with your own provider first. Next question, what are some serums for hyperpigmentation, best products for dark spots? I got this question over and over. I do every single week. And the truth is, there is no one single product for hyperpigmentation, probably aside from sunscreen. That's the most important thing that you can do, is a tinted sunscreen every single day. But there's not one single product that's going to target your hyperpigmentation. It's about the entire regimen, because each step of the regimen tackles the hyperpigmentation in a different way. So you might have some gentle chemical exfoliants that help to increase cell turnover, to bring some of that pigment up to the surface and then exfoliate it off the skin over time. You might have a retinoid, which also helps to increase cell turnover, but works in a different way than chemical exfoliants do. Also, a tinted sunscreen, as I mentioned, is hands down the most important thing you can do. And then you want something like a vitamin C, the antioxidants. Then you might also incorporate some sort of a lightening serum that has ingredients to actually stop the pigmentation pathway at different checkpoints in that pathway. There are some ingredients that stop those pigment-making cells from producing pigment. There are some ingredients that help keep that pigment from then transferring over into your skin cells. So there are a lot of options, and really you need a comprehensive routine to target hyperpigmentation. There is not a, just throwing in a hyperpigmentation serum really isn't going to be of that much benefit for you. You have to understand how to formulate an appropriate regimen. And I actually have a freebie for this. If you go to skinthusiast.com/hyperpigmentation, you can sign up for the email list and get a free hyperpigmentation guide. Again, not medical advice, just general skincare guidance. So always make sure you're checking with your provider if you're actively treating your hyperpigmentation. Next question, exfoliating serum on nights off retinol. Please explain what this would look like. So I get this question a lot, how to incorporate chemical exfoliants into a routine when you're using a retinoid. And what I will say is not everybody needs to. In fact, I rarely use a chemical exfoliant. I use a retinoid most nights, and that gets the job done for what I need for my skin. However, if you're someone who really feels like you want to either experiment with chemical exfoliants, or you feel like they are really helpful for your skin, we could do an entire episode on chemical exfoliants, by the way. There's so many different ones, and not all of them are created equal. Not all of them are for all skin types. But in general, if you're wanting to incorporate some sort of an exfoliating product, whether it's a peel pad, a serum, an exfoliating toner, an exfoliating ingredient in your moisturizer, etc., I do recommend skipping your retinoid on that night. For some people who have more resistant skin, and something I do sometimes is use a chemical exfoliant cleanser in the morning, and then you still use my retinoid at night. And that way you're just getting a little bit of exfoliation. It's, well, you're washing it off the skin, the ingredient's not being left on, and then it's not, you know, impairing the skin barrier in a way that won't allow you to tolerate your retinoid later that evening. But if you're using a leave-on product, yes, I recommend skipping that night. It could be as simple as you use your retinol 7 days a week, you decide to stop one of those days and instead use a really gentle chemical exfoliant that night. You really have to find what works for you. For some people, they'll alternate nights. For some people, they'll do retinoid one night, exfoliant one night, then skip a night altogether of actives. You really have to find what works best for your skin. I will say, though, that retinoids are, aside from sunscreen, the most effective anti-aging ingredient that we have. So the more often you can use them, oftentimes the better, as long as your skin is tolerating it. So we don't want to skip too many nights in favor of other ingredients, is my point. Next question, how to smooth skin texture? So retinoids are going to be gold standard for smoothing skin texture, followed closely by chemical exfoliants. So if you're someone really dealing with a lot of texture, this is a case where I think it might be helpful to kind of alternate those retinoids and chemical exfoliants until you figure out what works best for your skin. Also, skin texture can mean different things to different people. Sometimes it's just rough and bumpy texture. Sometimes people say skin texture when they have acne scars. Sometimes they say skin texture when they have acne. Sometimes it's enlarged pores. So finding out what the exact issue is most helpful when it comes to treating skin texture. And if you're unsure about that, definitely seeing your derm provider so they can actually look closely at your skin and explain to you what's going on is helpful. Next question. This person said, I use Adapalene and my acne cleared, but for fine lines and hyperpigmentation, should I switch? So Adapalene is an effective retinoid in general. It is best known for its anti-acne abilities, but we do know that it also can help with hyperpigmentation and anti-aging similarly to other retinoids. Now, if you weren't experiencing acne, would I go to Adapalene for these issues? No, I would go to a retinaldehyde, a retinol, or a tretinoin. However, if you're doing really well on your Adapalene and it seems to be clearing your acne, I would stick with it. And that's because anytime you're switching something, even if you're switching to another retinoid, you do run the risk of that acne potentially coming back. So it's kind of if it's not broke, don't fix it type of thing. If the Adapalene's working for you, keep using it. And then if your skin is feeling good, it's not feeling sensitized, you can start adding in some other ingredients that are made to target some of the other issues you're having, like the hyperpigmentation and all those other issues. Microneedling with small active breakouts, yes or no? This is a no. If you have any sort of acne breakout or breakout, you want to avoid microneedling. Any sort of injury to the skin is not recommended when you have a breakout, and that's for many reasons, but the main one being the risk of infection. Is microneedling the best for acne scarring? Is it the best? No. Is it helpful? Absolutely. We know that a series of microneedling can increase collagen by up to 400% if it's done at the right depth. And that increasing collagen is one of the factors that really helps it, helps those acne scars to be lessened and softened. However, there are lasers that are more efficacious for treating acne scarring. They're more aggressive, you have more downtime, and they're often more expensive. So you have to really weigh your lifestyle, your budget, all of those things. But microneedling is a great option for acne scarring. It's just not the best one, but very commonly used and with great results. It's important to note that you will need a series, though. It's not a one and done. Another microneedling question, microneedling on more mature skin, is it worth it? Similar to the acne scarring answer, will there be an increase in collagen? Yes, if it's done appropriately. Will it be enough that you notice a major change? That depends on the degree of skin laxity and skin changes we're already seeing. So if you have more mature skin and you're dealing with kind of like the fine crepiness, the superficial skin texture, things like that, I recommend a laser like the CO2 laser. But even that, there is some skin tightening abilities, but I find one of the biggest things I notice when patients come in after a certain age is that they're expecting a device or a procedure in the dermatology office to give them facelift results. Like they want to actually lift the skin, and that will not happen. There is nothing that is going to give you a facelift result except a facelift. So I just want to say that because oftentimes people come in with expectations that are just unrealistic for what can be done with a needle or a device. This episode is brought to you by, well, me. Skinthusiast.com is your one-stop shop for all things skin, hair, and beauty. I have countless blog posts to educate you on all the skin concerns and most common skin questions I receive. We also have a complete skincare basics guide on our shop page, as well as the cutest In My Skin Era crew necks. If you want to support the show, please head over to skinthusiast.com/shop. And don't forget to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, some LED questions. What is the LED mask supposed to do? So LED uses light at different wavelengths to target different concerns. So if we have like red and near infrared light, we are looking to increase collagen, decrease inflammation, help with the signs of aging like fine lines and wrinkles. If we have blue light, that's generally to target acne and reduce acne bacteria. So there's different targets depending on what concerns you have and what type of light you're using. How many days per week do I use my LED mask? I use mine almost every day. I use red light only because I do have melasma, and blue light can worsen melasma. So I either use my Dr. Dennis Gross mask only on the red setting because it also has a blue light setting, or I use my current body mask, which is red and near infrared, and it has no blue light setting. So I use one of those. I can leave my code for Current Body below. It's CB Amy, and that gets you 15% off. I have another question here. Do I think cheaper LED masks are worth it? At this time, I don't. That's not to say no company is ever going to come out with an efficacious, cheaper LED mask. I think eventually, as this technology continues to progress, we will see that, because it happens with everything. As it gets more sophisticated and more readily available, prices start dropping. So I think it will happen eventually. But right now, I would say the ones I recommend are unfortunately over a few hundred dollars. So again, it is not a necessity. This is not a need to have in your routine. This is something after your entire routine is down pat, after you've done anything in office that you're thinking about doing or prioritizing, then when you have, you know, the budget or the leftover money, that's when you start incorporating at-home devices like LED and microcurrent. I did have a question in Sunday's Q&A on if you could only buy one device based on your budget right now, should you do LED or microcurrent? And the answer is definitely, for me, LED. We have the most data on it. I think it's going to be the best use of your money if you could only choose one. I do, of course, use a microcurrent device every day, but if I had to pick between the two, I would pick my LED mask. What helped me decide to become a PA instead of a dermatologist? This is a really good question. I was not positive I wanted to work in dermatology when I first became a PA. And in fact, I didn't in the beginning. If anyone's followed for a while, you know I was a critical care PA for 3 years before I started working and training in dermatology. And I'm so glad that I did. It was one of the most exciting times in my life to be able to really help someone on their scariest days and to see people come in, you know, in critical condition and then walk out of the hospital in weeks or months time is very rewarding. However, obviously, I think most people can tell that skin is my true passion and always kind of has been. However, I think when you're choosing whether to become a PA or a physician, actually, I had Dr. Sam Ellis on the podcast and she said something really great. If you are not okay just being a doctor, then med school is not for you because you don't know where you're going to end up matching residency. And that was a concern for me as well. I didn't know if I would end up matching in a residency that I wanted to pursue. And if I did, what if I decided to change my mind and work in a different field of medicine in a few years, 10 years, 20 years? What would be my ability to do that if I was a physician? So those were the two biggest things for me when it came to deciding between PA and physician. But as she said, you need to go into med school being okay if you don't match with whatever residency you want, because that's a reality for a lot of people. So if you're set on one specific specialty, then you may want to consider other routes to get there if your heart is not set on being a physician. So for me, it wasn't a huge decision. I think I kind of thought about it for a bit of time, but once I decided, and actually once I was even introduced to a PA for the first time, I was like, oh, this is for sure what I want to do, and I just moved forward with that. Okay, sunspots on face that retinol is not getting rid of. So retinol is one of the greatest ingredients that we have, but it cannot do everything. There are some things that skincare ingredients in general can't do. And sunspots is one of those things. So you will almost never be able to lighten hyperpigmentation fully, no matter the cause, to a point where it looks good and it's managed, yes, but completely away, that's unlikely. And we see that a lot with true sunspots, like solar lentigos, actual sunspots that have been diagnosed by your dermatology provider. And in those cases, often the best thing is a laser. In my clinic, the laser that we use is called the Gentlemax Pro, and we have great success with that. Sometimes it takes a couple of treatments and there is a little bit of downtime. The spot will kind of darken and scab, but that's really the most effective. And again, even that may not completely take it away, but it should lighten it to a point where you're happier with it. Okay, how do I address dry, damaged hair? There are countless ways to address dry, damaged hair. You have to really do an inventory of your entire routine and your hair care practices to see what you're doing. The biggest culprits, of course, are chemical services and heat. So you want to make sure that you're addressing those in your lifestyle factors, if that is a factor for your dry, damaged hair. Then you want to use conditioning agents, peptide treatments, and bond builders. Change up your shampoos potentially to something that isn't so stripping. Pre-oil treatments are great, oiling your hair before you get in the shower so you protect your strands from the sulfates in the shampoos that are necessary for cleansing your scalp. Sleeping on silk can help with breakage. Treating your hair, like really babying your hair, brushing it very gently, not putting in it tight hairstyles, not putting it up in a heavy towel, all these things matter. I actually have an entire hair care series. If you go to skinthusiast.com/haircare, you can sign up for the email list and it will sign you up for a 4-day series. And each day you'll get a new email about how to kind of overhaul your hair routine and really just improve the health of your hair. There are so many things that I started incorporating in the last few years that have absolutely transformed my hair to the point where when I go get it done at the salon, they're asking me like, what do you use? What tools do you use? Do you take vitamins? All those things, because they're so impressed with what my hair feels like, which always makes me feel good because I do invest a lot of time and money in my hair care routine. So that brings me to my next question. Is it possible to simplify the hair routine? Absolutely. Not everybody needs an extensive routine if your hair is not damaged. And even then, you can pick the things that are most impactful for you. If you're dealing with a lot of damage, I do think the K-18 is highly, highly worth it. It is the best peptide bond building treatment we have out there. If your hair is not very damaged, don't invest in the K18 because although it will help your hair, this is if you're on a budget. It will help your hair for sure. It might not help it enough that it's noticeable to you and makes it worth it for you to spend. I think it's like $70 on the K18. So in those cases, just stick to a shampoo that's suitable for your scalp, right? You want something that really foams up and lathers well and comes out more clear if you have an oily scalp. If you have a dry scalp, you don't necessarily need to have those really strong surfactants. So definitely check out my hair care series. There's also a lot of guidance on that, picking the right shampoo, etc. Conditioning masks. You can have a two-step hair routine and have amazing results. It's just about picking the right products for your hair. I'll maybe do a whole episode on hair health because I think that there's so much to talk about here and it doesn't have to be complicated. You can make it as complicated as you want in the sense that you can really start tackling every little thing in your hair care routine to optimize it, or you can keep it really simple and also have really amazing results. Rosacea recommendations. I get this question every week as well. Rosacea is incredibly nuanced. So there are people with rosacea who can use vitamin C and retinoids, no problem. I'm one of them for the most part. There are some people with rosacea who can't even look at vitamin C without breaking out. So that's why it's incredibly difficult to answer these questions. What I will say is that if you're in the heat of a rosacea breakout and you're trying to get it under control, peeling back to a very simple, gentle cleanser, gentle moisturizer, and mineral sunscreen in the morning, and then cleansing and moisturizing at night is kind of key to just pulling back. And then also, of course, seeing your dermatology provider, because there are some prescription topicals that we can use that are effective with rosacea. Also knowing your triggers and what type of rosacea you have. For some of us, it's just flushing. For others, there are papules and pustules involved that make it look more like acne. Knowing your triggers, which are most often exercise, exertion, alcohol, dairy, heat is a huge one. Knowing what could be causing you to flare and then avoiding that if possible is really helpful. For me, I know my triggers are red wine. Exercise always makes me flush. Now, I don't avoid exercise. I just understand that my rosacea is going to flare after a workout. And then I try to immediately cool my face down as much as possible, because this isn't a whole other story, but those rosacea flares can also worsen melasma if you have that. So you want to make sure you're keeping your skin as calm as possible as often as possible. So I'll leave some recommendations for some products I love for rosacea below. But the reason you don't see me talk about specific regimens too often is because it is so nuanced. It's probably one of the most nuanced topics in skincare when it comes to making blind recommendations. But that being said, I'm going to start leaning into rosacea content a little bit more, give you guys some blog posts and some more recommendations, because there I can definitely tell that you guys are looking for that. What do I do for scalp care? So for scalp care, I wouldn't say that I have a strong scalp care routine. It's more that the scalp is really an extension of my hair care routine. So what I mean by that is there are a couple of serums I'll sometimes use on my scalp. One of them is to stimulate the hair follicle. Another one is to reduce product buildup, because I only wash my hair about every 5 days. So I do get product buildup because I use things like dry shampoo. I work out, you know, I use leave-in products. So making sure that those aren't building up on the scalp is really important. And it's a key to making sure that your hair stays healthy and vibrant. So my scalp health routine definitely has some of that detox routine incorporated. If you've ever seen my Instagram, I talk a lot about just my detox routine in general, my scalp detox routine. And that is just a product to eliminate product buildup, something like the Briogeo spray with salicylic acid, and then a detox shampoo. I'm saying detox, but it just means clarifying. That's all that word means. The K18 detox shampoo is the clarifying shampoo I use most often because it doesn't dry or strip my scalp. But in general, it's about picking the right products, mostly shampoos for your scalp. So if you have an oily scalp, you definitely can look for those words detox, clarifying. If you don't use a lot of products and you don't have an oily scalp, you do not need a quote unquote detox routine for your scalp. You can use a more moisturizing shampoo that's not going to then strip the hair and strip your scalp. But I'll cover scalp health a little bit more in the podcast episode I do about hair, but it is also covered in the hair care series that I mentioned earlier, which is free, by the way. You don't have to pay for that. It's just a free email that comes to you. Okay. Breastfeeding safe regimen. For breastfeeding in general, it's similar to pregnancy, except that you can add back in your retinoid. So there is not a concern with using oral vitamin A derivatives like retinol when you're breastfeeding. The reason we don't recommend them in pregnancy is because of the theoretical risk of birth defects. And that is with high doses of vitamin A. So it's not been seen with retinol. But out of an abundance of caution, we recommend avoiding that in pregnancy. Once you're breastfeeding, the baby's here. We obviously don't have that risk of birth defects anymore. The baby's already been born. So you can use those vitamin A derivatives while breastfeeding. You do want to avoid hydroquinone. There are a lot of topical medications, topical prescriptions, of course, oral prescriptions that you want to avoid. So make sure you're covering all of that with your dermatology provider. Don't start any topical medications without letting them know that you're breastfeeding. But your general cleansers, moisturizers, vitamin C, your retinol, sunscreens are fine. You can stick to a mineral sunscreen during pregnancy and breastfeeding if you prefer. The data is not strong on chemical sunscreens, but there is some question. So I think it's totally reasonable to avoid chemical sunscreens when you're pregnant and breastfeeding and stick to mineral options. Best product to use on the lips to keep hydrated. Honestly, petrolatum, which is Vaseline, Aquaphor, Prequel ointment, they all have the same active ingredient of petrolatum. That will actually moisturize the lips, keep any water loss, occlude any water loss, and just actually moisturize them instead of the chapstick that just makes you kind of embark on this cycle of putting on chapstick, needing more chapstick, putting on chapstick, then you need more chapstick. You want to avoid that. So a lot of traditional chapsticks can actually make the problem worse. So Vaseline, petrolatum, Aquaphor, those are the best for the lips. Perioral dermatitis recommendations, another very nuanced and tough topic. In general, if you're dealing with PD, you want to pull back on your routine as much as possible. Gentle cleansers, gentle moisturizers, mineral sunscreen. You can use sulfur-based cleansers. Definitely talk to your dermatology provider if you're experiencing this. Avoiding topical steroids, avoiding fluoride in your toothpaste, SLS, those are some common triggers. Also, dyes in makeup products can cause it. There are many, many causes. So you have to kind of look at your routine and do an inventory and see what could potentially be causing the issue and pulling back on those. Also, chewing gum, anything that has that menthol or cooling sensation could be doing it. So, taking a look at what you're using, have you started anything new? And then pulling back on your regimen to keep it really, really simple until your skin feels back to normal. But it is really difficult to treat. There are some treatments we can do in the office. Treatments mean medications that you can take in office with your provider if they feel that it's necessary. Favorite acne safe foundations. So, acne safe is another topic that could be an entire category. Acne safe or an entire podcast. Acne safe and comedogenicity are incredibly nuanced topics, and that's because the way that we studied comedogenic ingredients isn't exactly how these ingredients act in real life on real human skin within our regimens, within our products. So you will really never see me say that a product is non-comedogenic or it's acne safe. However, as someone who is acne prone and a dermatology provider, I understand that there is a need for product recommendations that make you feel a little bit more comfortable using them. And what I can tell you is that I've tested many foundations on my skin, and there are a few that I love and go back to over and over. I actually just did a like to know it po post on this because the Sephora sale is coming up, or it's probably already live when you're listening to this. So some that I can think of off the top of my head, I really love CL, the brand CL. They have a great foundation with SPF. I love the one from YSL. There are a couple more on that list. So if you just go to my LTK, you'll see that it's a picture of me holding the It Cosmetics CC tube. And there are some recommendations in there. And speaking of Sephora sale, because I did get a lot of questions last week on recommendations for that, I really peel through the sale and try to find the products that are actually worth it from a dermatology standpoint, not just the skincare products, but also the hair care and beauty products that I think are worth your money at a discount, because I think these sales can be really overwhelming and they make you feel like you just need to buy everything at once. And the reality is, we know that less is more. So use this sale strategically. This goes for any sale to, number one, stock up on your favorites, of course, but number two, like, really lean into the experts during this time so that they can help guide you, because so many of the products at these big box beauty retailers are just fluff and don't actually do anything. So if you're going to spend your money, it's helpful to make sure that it's actually going to be beneficial for the skin. So last year I started doing a little email blast about the Sephora sale. So if you go to skinthusiast.com/Sephora sale, you'll get my updated list from this year, combing through the site, what's on sale and seeing what I think is actually worth it and what's not. That wasn't all the questions, but honestly, I think we're going to have to split it up for another episode because there are countless more. And you can keep asking your questions on my Sunday Q&A on Instagram if you have any questions. If I don't get to them on that day, I'll file them for later for another video or for another podcast episode where I answer your questions. And of course, you can leave your questions in reviews on the podcast. You can DM me. Anything you want me to talk about, I am all ears and happy to answer your guys' questions. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you are a fan of the show, if you could rate and review, it means the world to me. I try to pick a listener every week to send a little box of goodies to as just a thank you for reviewing the show. Because I know, as a consumer, it takes a few minutes out of your day to log on, put in your name and put in a review, but I also know how impactful it is on the back end for me. So if you have a second to take the time to do that, it would mean the world to me. And thank you so much for tuning in. Next week's episode is so good. You guys are going to be so excited. I can't wait to share it with you. And I'll talk to you next week, Skinthusiasts.